Here's the big thing that we do. Once we hire the right one, we give them the systems and procedures and processes that we put into our business that we want them to do for our properties, because that's running a business. So that is what we need to do, is find the right property manager, hire them, and then give them the systems and procedures and processes to run our business as well.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What's going on, everybody? You know the drill. And for those that are new, every Monday, we're coming at you all things multifamily real estate investing. Every Friday, it's personal finance Fridays. Because after all, we know it's not what you make, but what you keep. We got to teach you how to keep that money working harder and smarter for you. But today, Multifamily Mondays, we've got a great guest. His name is Dustin Heiner. And Dustin has a cool saying. You'll see it right on his shirt. It's called Successfully Unemployed. And what we talk about is how he went from actually being unemployed. He got fired from a job in IT in the state of California. So something you think would be secured. One, it's IT. Everyone needs IT. Two, it's a government job. You think you wouldn't get let go. And he talks about then right after that, he realized that he needed to do something so he could always know that he had money to provide for his family, for his wife, for his kids. And that's how he fell into real estate. And so he got the next job, and then he started building a rental portfolio. And we talk about how he did that, how he was able to scale enough so that within 6 years, he could successfully retire, be successfully unemployed from that job. And now he teaches others how to do it too. So we talk about a lot of cool stuff, obviously how to scale that business and how to do that at a decent speed. Talk about markets investing in, right? So he was in California. He couldn't invest in California to get the cash flow he needed. He had to go elsewhere. So we talk about how do you manage out of state? What are some of the questions you should ask potential property managers? It's just a really good conversation I had with Dustin. I think you guys are going to get a lot out of it. So without further ado, here is Dustin. Hey, Dustin, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, Sean. I really appreciate being able to come on. In fact, real estate investing is terrific, but it's what it affords me to do in my life. And I mean, I literally, and I love the term successfully unemployed. I'm successfully unemployed. I'm not necessarily retired, which when I would say that, because I retired when I was 37 years old or quit my job when I was 37 years old, people ask me, what do you do with your life? And I'd be like, well, I do lots of other stuff. I build businesses now. But with that, you know, I get to go to the gym in the morning, come home and hang out with my family, come on podcasts and talk to great people like you. So I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Hey, thank you. And I'm really excited to jump into this, but thanks for taking time out of your day to come on here and talk to us. I know you're going to bring a lot of value. And Dustin's coming to us from sunny Arizona. So for those of you like me on the East Coast, we can be a little jealous of his nice weather. But no, I want to hear about that. Like, how did you retire at 37? Why did you retire at 37? I'm assuming it's from real estate. So let's just talk about that, like how this all transpired.
Yeah, totally. So like I said, when I was 37 years old, I was blessed to have enough properties, enough real estate that made me money every single month in passive income so that my expenses were covered and I had enough money to keep investing. Now, I didn't start that way, though. In fact, I started just like every single person starts. We all start and we're told this plan, quote unquote plan that we're all told they do. We go to school. We get good grades. And then we take those good grades and we go to college or university and we get in thousands and thousands of dollars into debt. And then we get more good grades and try to get that piece of paper that we get, which is a degree. And then you take that degree and you go to companies and you try to get a quote unquote career and work 40 plus years of your life and hopefully retire at 65 or 70 years old and live on what you managed to save that entire time that you're working that. And I like the term a J-O-B. It's your job is a J-O-B, the just over broke, because that's what you're living is just over broke when you're working that job. And so I'm doing that exact same thing. And at the same time, though, I've always been entrepreneurial in my life. When I was young, when I was 13 years old, I had a newspaper out. A lot of people don't know what newspapers are anymore, but it's newspapers, you know, news on the paper. I'd ride around on a bike at 5 a.m, throw the newspapers and bang them on garage doors, waking people up. I even had a graphic website design company. I had a skateboard manufacturing business. I even had a pizzeria and a convenience store. Started these all from the ground up because I love business. But at the same time, following the quote unquote plan that everybody else tells you to do. And I got the most stable, secure job you could ever think of. It was in California where I was living at the time. Started working for the local county government doing IT. So California is not going anywhere. Government's not going anywhere, that's for sure. And technology is not going anywhere. So I got the most stable, secure job. At the same time, I bought one rental property or one residential property. When I say residential, it's 4 units and below because it's really, really simple to do residential. Since then, got into multifamily. But starting with that one property, I got a check from my property manager for $317. I could visually see it in my mind, that check, because it was just grained in my... I made $317 and I didn't do anything. I need to be an investor. I need to get more of these. Well, you know what happens, Sean, just like everybody, life started getting in the way. And so my wife and I started having children, 1, 2, 3, and our fourth child. And this is what really got me to become an investor. So when my wife had her fourth child, I went on paternity leave. That's where the dad stays home with the mom, changes poopy diapers and bonds with the baby and all that good stuff. And so I go on paternity leave for a couple weeks. And then I go back to work. And in that same week that I go back to work, my fourth child had just been born on a Friday at 3:30 in the afternoon. I get a call from my boss's secretary, like the top dog. And she says, "Dustin, would you please come to the office?" And I said, "Sure." And then I hung up the phone and I paused for a second. I thought, why in the world are they calling me the office? Like, this isn't normal. And I've seen plenty of movies. Friday at 3:30 is not a good sign for you to get called to the boss's office. And I also remembered a couple months before I went on paternity leave, there were some rumors or some rumbling going on in the office that there could potentially be layoffs. Well, I immediately shook that off because this is the government. I've been working here for 12 or 13 years. I've got great seniority. I'm totally fine. So I shook it off, but then I got up and I walked down the hallway to my boss's office. And this hallway isn't very long. In fact, it's kind of short, but every single step I took, it felt like the hallway got longer and longer and longer. And it felt like my feet became lead bricks because I knew that something was up and the weight of potentially losing my job was weighing on me. Well, I get down the hallway and I turn the corner. I see my boss's door. His door is closed. And I see a secretary there, super sweet, nice old lady. She says, "Dustin, would you please have a seat?" So I go and I take a seat. And she's trying to officially kind of grinning at me, trying to console me with her eyes because she knows everything about what's going on. I know nothing about what's going on. So I go and I take my seat and I think about my life. If I lose my job right now, all that plan I was told and that I was walking in, did I just waste my life doing all this if I lose my job right now? And then I thought, oh my goodness, we just had our fourth child. If I don't have a job, I can't feed our family. Does that make me a failure as a father? Does that make me a failure as a husband, as a man trying to provide for his family? Well, as I'm sitting there, my hands get all clammy. My forehead gets all sweaty because the nerves of everything is just starting to crush down on me. Well, the door to my boss's office opens up and out walks a lady, a coworker of mine, with a piece of paper in her hands. She is noticeably distraught, noticeably upset. She's not necessarily crying, but you can tell her world has been rocked. She passes by me. My boss says, "Dustin, would you please come to the office?" So I go into his office and I get laid off. And remember, this is the government. Nobody gets fired or laid off from the government, but I did. And this is the reason why I tell the story. So hopefully you learn from this. So I take that layoff notice and I go back to my desk and I sit down on my desk and I realize two things. Well, the first thing, I need to get another job. I need to be able to provide for my family. So I was really, really blessed, praise the Lord, to find another job in the same county. A whole different department wasn't having the same issues. So check, got that. But the second thing, sitting in that chair, just getting laid off, I realized that I need to make sure that this never, ever happens to me again. I need to make sure that nobody has the ability to take away my ability to feed my family. So right then and there, I realized that I needed to be an investor, but just life got in the way. I also realized that anytime anybody would ask me the question, we all get the same question. They say, "Dustin, what do you do?" And I would say, just literally reply with my job. "Oh, I work for the county doing technology there for the county." Well, I'm basically projecting the value that I put on myself as coming from my job. My value doesn't come from my job. My value comes from my God and from myself and from my family. So right then and there, I realized that I am now always going to reply that I am an investor because I knew I needed to be an investor, but life got in the way. So it may so happen that 100% of my money comes from my job. That's not my part-time job. I am a full-time investor. So fast forward the story, started buying property after property after property, each one making me a minimum of $250 a month in passive income. Eventually, I had 30 plus properties and I realized, why in the world am I still working here? Even though I'm making $75,000 a year at this job, I'm losing money. So the last part of the story, I went to my new boss, great boss and all. And I said, "Hey boss, here's your 2 weeks notice. Like, I'm laying you off." And jokingly, we laughed and everything. He said, "Well, Dustin, what are you going to do?" I said, "I don't have to do anything. I own real estate that works for me while I sleep. I make money without even doing anything." So last part of the story, if you remember that short hallway, they got longer and longer and longer. That felt like my feet became lead bricks. Well, I've walked to and from my car. I worked in downtown, a mile and a half walk. I've done it 1,000 times. This last time, walking away from my job for the last time, I felt like I was walking on clouds because I knew I would never, ever need a job again. And everybody, listen to this. You need to realize that nobody will ever pay you what you're worth. Your boss is not paying you what you're worth. And this is how you'll know this. Your boss is paying you just enough to keep you working without quitting, but not so much money it takes money out of their pocket. If they paid you what you're worth, they would probably go broke. And so instead, what would be better is if you found a way to make the money that you are valued with. So for me, it was buying real estate, buying rental properties, eventually getting up to syndications and multifamily and all that sort of stuff. And so with that, I was able to then make sure that nobody else could ever take away my ability to feed my family. So I'll pause the story because you probably got plenty of questions.
Yeah. We could just unpacking that. We could take the rest of the episode, which maybe we'll do. But no, that's a phenomenal story. And I don't even know where to start. There's so much I want to talk about because I didn't, not to that extent, but I've had those similar sentiments where, you know, I worked in finance, had a good job, but there's the golden handcuffs, right? And it's not just money, but you think it's security. But to me, it's a false sense of security because you're beholden to that company, right? And they are beholden to shareholders. So they have to make decisions are going to affect your life for the bottom line. I don't want to be part of that again. And I have no plan of ever treating my own employees like that. But the reality of it is most companies do, right? So my question is that mindset shift, like, did you have to one, convince your spouse that this is what you're going to do? And then two, because I know that's a big part of it, right? Like that's got to be aligned in that sense. You don't want your biggest obstacle to be the one at home, right? And two, what was the first step? Because that's the question I always get is, okay, that's all great and that sounds amazing, but like, I don't have money. I don't think I have the time to do it or the know-how. Like, what was that first step?
So we'll start with the spouse or my wife. And my wife, she's very risk averse. And her dad was a teacher and her mom was a stay-at-home mom. So they were the most risk averse people ever. And with that, she had that same risk tolerance, which was just very, very low. And I, on the other hand, wanted to start investing in real estate. So it took so much convincing in helping her to understand how we were not going to lose money and how we're going to make money every single month. So we were really blessed, just got married and bought a first property and all that sort of stuff. And she was reluctantly eventually got on board and we bought a first property over time because I basically coached her on how we're going to not lose money, how we're going to buy the right properties, how we're going to manage the properties and how we're going to make money every single month. That's what got her on board. And then after 30 plus properties, I don't even need to tell her when I buy property. I might just say, hey, I just bought a property. She's like, okay, good. And goes back to, you know, cooking dinner or something. So that was rough. But once we get over that hurdle, it's smooth sailing from there because for me, it's building a business that then runs itself. That is the number one thing that we must do. But I did not do that. So I started investing back in 2006. 2006, I was working the government, watching TV late night. I don't know, like one of those late night infomercials came on. They say, hey, we're real estate gurus. We're coming to your town. We're going to give you a free 2-hour seminar. I was like, sweet. I want to learn how to invest in real estate. So I went to that 2-hour seminar and it was horrible. It was all a sales pitch for and hype and everything. And they say, now it's normally $50,000 for this 2-day seminar, but it's only $1,000 today. Run to the back and go give us money. I'm like, okay. And I ran to the back. I was so pumped up, bought into it, went to this next 2-day seminar, all hype, all sales pitch for their $50,000 advanced course, their $80,000. It was just a sales to get into the next course. It was so horrible, but I did take what little they taught you. And I did that. And my property manager started stealing from me within 6 months. Let me quickly give you the wrong way, but then quickly forget it because I'll give you the right way and what is the right way to do it now. So what they say is find a property anywhere in the country and then you run the numbers. Running numbers means you calculate your expenses, make sure your income is over. And they say, make sure you're making $50 a month or $25 a month in passive income, but you'll get appreciation. Remember, this is 2006. So they were saying, oh, values are never going to come down. Keep buying and go for appreciation, which I'll pause this and say, I don't invest for appreciation. In fact, I will literally give these properties to my kids in generational wealth. With that, I invest for passive income because my family can't eat off appreciation. They can only eat from passive income. So getting back to the wrong way, find a property anywhere in the country to invest, run the numbers, make sure you're making $50 a month in passive income, you'll get appreciation, then spend thousands of dollars to buy the property, then spend thousands of dollars to fix up the property, and then find a tenant, and then find a property manager. Well, in my opinion, that's just about backwards. I did every single step that they said, and my property manager started stealing from me within 6 months. It was horrible. But Sean, I didn't hang my head and say, no, this doesn't work, I'm just going to give up. I didn't do that. I thought, and remember, I've always been entrepreneurial. So I thought, man, maybe I approach this from a business mindset. What would I do if I was approaching this as a business mindset? Well, this is what it looks like. We build the business first. A lot of the gurus will tell you, you buy one property, that property is your business. It doesn't matter if it's residential or multifamily, but that property is your business. No. My business owns inventory. And this is what it looks like. If you have a convenience store and you want to start a convenience store, candy bars and soda machines and all that good stuff, well, you're not going to sign a lease on a location, open the doors and set a box of candy bars in there on the ground. No, you wouldn't do that. You go out of business in 2 seconds. What you would do though, is you would build the business first. You get the gondolas, so there's a shelving unit, so all the candy bars go on, the countertops, the cold storage, bank accounts, insurance, cash registers, employees, everything in the business before you buy any inventory. Same thing with real estate investing, residential, multifamily, whatever it might be, commercial, you build the entire business first, and then you buy that property, and that property is your inventory, and that's when you put it in your business. That's how I was able to scale my business so fast. In 6 to maybe 7 years, I had 27 properties, I think, at the time, and I had enough properties to be able to quit my job because all I needed to do was buy the next piece of inventory and put it to my business, and then my business runs itself. So in getting started, that is the biggest hurdle I've seen for most people, because we think the hardest part is finding a property and buying the property. No, that's the easiest part. The harder part is making sure that it makes you money every single month so that you can eventually pass it down to your kids. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I look at it similar. Like, I look at my business as like a conglomerate, and then I look at the individual properties. I guess I could look at it as inventory, but smaller businesses that they operate, but they wouldn't be able to operate themselves without the big corporation managing it. But that makes perfect sense. And one thing I want to highlight that you said is after the 6 months, you could have just gave up and said, no, this is not for me. And that's the thing I feel like a lot of people stumble upon, is they hit a roadblock and give up. You just got to keep pushing through, because trust me, once this clicks, there's nothing like it. And maybe for it to click, you need to hire someone to help you to get over those hurdles. And that's fine. Don't let the ego get in the way. Like, don't do that. I have mentors, I've paid for education, and that's what's got to me where I am today. But my question next is, so you said you want to buy properties that obviously cash flow, right? And that make financial sense. So is there anything you're looking for specifically that you could share with the listeners that you feel is great criteria for that?
Totally. So I love playing Monopoly in general, like obviously the board game, but in real life, I love playing Monopoly. So you don't necessarily need to start with land, but you can start with a house in real life and buy that house, and then have that cash flow, then buy the next property, and then the next property, eventually getting into having plenty of money to now invest in syndications and multifamily and commercials and storage units. That's what I love to do, is keep doing that. Now, to get that first property, what it was really making sure that I was able to not just get the financing, but also have the, I guess, education in order to do that. Quickly want to touch on your point of, yeah, if you want to think about paying for education as being a detriment or your ego kind of get in the way, well, if you went to college, you literally paid for education for 4 years and got in lots and lots of debt, possibly. And so if you're going to hire a coach, somebody who's going to help you save your time. Now, here's two things. You're either going to pay with your time or your money. And so the only commodity you can't get back, you can't make more of, is time. So if you can hire somebody, you listen to Sean's podcast, you really grow and you get better because you're really just learning from other people, then they're going to save you time. What took me 7 years to eventually quit my job, I literally have students now quitting their jobs in 2 and 3 years because they're fast-tracked, because I've helped them to take out all the problems. So with that, in order, and remind me again, what was the second part of that question, or the guts of that question? I lost track on that. I apologize.
No, you're good. That was great information. So someone's starting off, they're looking for a property. What is kind of the criteria for a property that you tell your students to look for?
Oh, criteria. There you go. Yes. So in order to quit my job, I knew I needed enough income from my properties to cover my expenses. The criteria for me is $250 a month in passive income that I need from every single property. Now, this is residential, 4 units and below. So if we have 4 units, then hopefully we're getting closer to maybe $750 a month. And there's a whole bunch of different numbers that you can kind of use as gauges. But by far, if you're going to buy a single family home, $250 is the minimum. And the reason why, it's the buffer. Just in case you didn't do your numbers right, you're not going to go into actually having and losing money. And this is how I was able to scale the business so fast. So one property makes $250 a month. That's $3,000 a year in passive income. 10 properties, I mean, it's simple math. 10 properties, $2,500 a month in passive income, $30,000 a year without working. 20 properties is $5,000 a month, $60,000 a year without working. And remember, I started investing back in 2006. Those homes that were making me $250 a month in passive income at a minimum, I'm making $500 and $600 and $700 or more, even $1,000 a month in passive income, because over time rents just go up, but my expenses stay fixed because I get 30-year fixed loans on these properties. Now, with that, the type of properties that we look for are cookie cutter type homes. Now, these cookie type homes are homes that everybody either wants to buy or rent. So three bedroom, two bath, 1,200 to 1,700 square feet. We don't want them too small that families don't want to live there. We don't want them too big that there's extra walls and toilets and flooring to put down. So that's a cookie cutter type home. But at the same time, we also look for homes that are lower in price. Rents are higher. So that difference in passive income is a minimum of $250. So what you could do, let's say you went out and said, you know, I'm going to buy a $400,000 house and make $250 a month. Well, that could be good. But if you don't have a tenant in there for 1 month, then more than likely that mortgage payment alone is going to eat up most of your passive income, let alone the turnover costs. How about instead buying a house that's maybe a $100,000 house, $150,000 house? And yes, there are homes that are less than $100,000. Like if you live on the coastlines, you're probably not going to realize that, but there are, Midwest is great. My students are buying all over the Midwest right now. The Carolinas are great, down into Florida. But what we do is we buy the properties that make us $250 a month. But before that, we make sure we have the business built so that we then buy the inventory, put it into our business, and that's how it scales over and over again.
I love that. And that's the thing about scale too. It's got to be a repeatable process that you can just rinse and repeat. Obviously, there's nuances to everything, but you've got to make it as simple as possible. So yeah, I love that. And I'm glad you brought up the point of looking in other markets, because like for you, you were in California. That's hard, if not impossible to do. And me and then I started in Boston, same thing. Like those are markets that you invest for appreciation, right? I still don't advise doing that, but those are the markets. That's what you're going to do, right? So you've got to have the cash flow coming from other places to be able to afford to do that. So I always have a question when managing from afar. How do you do that? Like, obviously, you talked about property management. So how do you vet these third-party property managers that are in a completely different state than you live in?
That's a fantastic question. And the reason why I like this question much better than what a lot of people think of, they think of jumping right to how do I find properties to buy and how do I fund properties to buy. In fact, I have a YouTube channel that I literally just give away all this information on how to do this. The most watched ones are how to find properties to buy and how to fund. The ones that they need to watch are not the ones that they do watch, like how to find the right property manager, how to interview them, how to make sure you're finding the right person that's going to run your business. Imagine if you did not interview somebody, you found just somebody off the street and said, manage my property. They said that they're a property manager. It could be potentially bad. Let me go back to the convenience store example. Let's say you built the entire business. You have the inventory in there. You have everything going. You find somebody across the street and they say, oh, I want to manage a business. They're like, okay, grab them, pull them in the business and say, hey, you got a pulse. You said you're a manager. I want you now to manage my company, manage my inventory, manage my money, manage my customers, manage my employees. No, you wouldn't do that. What you would do is you would hire slowly by interviewing them multiple times, interviewing many different property manager or managers for the store. So with real estate investing, exact same thing. We don't jump right to looking for properties. In fact, when I coach students, we find properties all over the country, anywhere in the country. We love investing out of state. And so let's say a student, this happens all the time. A student says, Dustin, I found a great city that I want to start investing in. Has good inventory, price to rent ratio, which means I'm going to be making a good amount of money in passive income. It's going to be great. And they say, I already have five realtors sending me deals for properties. I'm like, whoa, stop. If you bought one of those deals, who's going to manage it? Like, I don't know. I'm like, exactly. We don't want to buy the property and then try to find a property manager. In fact, I have a lot of people that this happens to. They'll say, I bought this property and then I called around property managers and no property managers wanted to manage it because they said they would get shot there. Well, if you have that problem, you no longer have an asset anymore. You have a liability. How much better instead of saying, property manager, I bought this property. Would you manage it? And they say no. Instead saying, because you've already built the business first, property manager, I'm looking to buy this property. Tell me how much it would rent for. What's the vacancy factor? What are the type of clientele? And will you manage it? And if they say, yes, this is how much you would manage it for. We'll manage it. This is how much you could rent for. Well, that's expert information. How much better if they would have said, I'm looking to buy this property. And they say, I won't manage it. Well, then you don't buy it. And they've saved you all that time and hassle because you built the business first. You have the property manager. So for me, finding the right property manager is interviewing multiple property managers, but at the same time, multiple times. In fact, over all my students, I literally have a list of 22 questions and the answers that you want to get from your property manager that you need to ask. And so my suggestion is interview many property managers. And here's a quick tip. Texting is not an interview. Email is not an interview. Phone calls are interviews. And you might not be able to get a property manager on a Zoom. They're probably too busy for Zoom, but just give them a call. And so what I do is I interview them. Here's a quick tip on three things that I look for in a property manager. Number one, can they communicate well? Like, can they even call you back? If they don't call you back before they have your business and they need to earn your business, imagine when they have your money. They're like, oh, this guy again, I don't want to answer it. So communication. Number two, are they trustworthy? When you talk to somebody on phone, I think most people have a general understanding of like, oh, this person feels a little shady to me, or it just doesn't feel right. Well, then you should probably listen to that. There are some people that are really, really good at reading people. Other people might not be so good, but listen to that. So trustworthiness. Do you feel like they're trustworthy? Next one is experience. Do they have the experience? Do they have other people that they're already managing properties for? Do they have experience in doing in the past and all that sort of stuff? So trustworthiness, communication first, trustworthiness second, and then experience after that. Once you have that, then that's a building blocks of finding the right employee. That's what they are, basically contractor slash employee. But we interview them very, very slow because, and everybody listening, I want you to have this property manager for 5, 10, 15 years and then literally never talk to them because they're running your business so well. But here's the big thing that we do. Once we hire the right one, we give them the systems and procedures and processes that we put into our business that we want them to do for our properties. It doesn't matter what they do for other properties, other landlords. No, how you run my business is this X, Y, and Z. Like the rent's due on the first, it's late after the third. The fourth, you put a three-day notice down. As soon as the three-day notice is up, then we do start the eviction process because that's running a business. So that is what we need to do is find the right property manager, hire them, and then give them the systems and procedures and processes to run our business as well.
That's great. And you said a lot of great stuff. I would highly recommend the listeners to rewind that and listen to it again. Two things so true about the interview: no email, no text, in person. And where I've had a lot of great experiences, actually, if you're able to, I know if you're investing out of state, it's tougher to do, but walk a property. Even if you're not going to buy it, walk a property with them, see how they operate, see what they're looking for. And it really just shows you, one, how they work and if they know their stuff too. And then I lost my train of thought, but the other thing I was going to say, what was the last point you said? Because it was really good, if you remember.
Yeah. So I'll quickly go three. Yeah, so yeah. Communication, trustworthiness, and experience. And then making sure that you're hiring them slow because you want them to be working with you for 5-10 years without even talking to them because they're doing their job, right? With the systems and procedures and processes.
That's what it was, the systems. A lot of people don't realize that. You don't have to have them run it the way they run every other property. That's so important. And one thing that I do is what a lot of property managers will do is the money comes into their account and then they operate it. No. I always have the money come into my account and then I release funds that need to be given to them for maybe maintenance, repairs, whatever it happens to be, bills that are paid. Because at the end of the day, what they end up doing is if they see money in a bank account, they're going to spend it, right? They're not looking at it. It's not their business. It's yours. And they're just going to spend it. So that's so true. And I'm glad you brought that up. Develop these systems. And if you don't have the systems, reach out someone like Dustin who does and learn from them and implement them and have them run it that way.
And with that, nobody cares about your money more than you do. And so if you think, oh, my property manager is taking care of it, well, I have great property managers. I take my time, I hire them well, and they've been with me for a long time. But a lot of times I find that they find contractors that are just way overpriced. I'll give you an example. Just recently, one of my property managers said, well, there are 6 light switches that don't work in this particular house. We got to get it fixed. A contractor said, or an electrician said, $1,000. I'm like, $1,000 for 6 light switches? My goodness, that's literally going to take 30 minutes to fix. And $1,000, I'm not going to do this, but I'd rather fly there, fix it myself and fly back. I would save money doing that because the property, we need to know our business. And the longer you're in the business, the longer you're an investor, the more you're going to see, the more you're going to understand how much things should cost and not cost. But when you're actively doing it and you are watching over your money, that's the best thing you can do. I definitely make sure that any expense is accounted for and I'm not getting fake receipts. In fact, that's how I found out that one of my first property managers was stealing from me. These fake receipts and these charges that didn't have receipts and just random things, like nothing was adding up. When that happened, I fired them very, very fast and found a good property manager as quickly as I could.
Yeah. And on the smaller properties, this obviously doesn't work well on like big properties because they got bigger bills. But on the smaller properties, how I always operated it was if there's any expense over $500, it has to get $500 has to get approved by me or whoever's operating it for me. They can't just willy-nilly just go spend money at any amount.
I'm a little lower.
You really? Even lower?
$200. Like, I don't mind being bothered if there's something. Now, multifamily is bigger. But, you know, there's a lot more going on. I completely agree, get that. But for me, I keep an eye on it. So if there's anything over $200, some of my students, they've had some issues with property managers. They even say any expense because they felt like they were getting nickel and dimed, like a $50 here, $100 there, and like literally three or four of those in 1 month. That eats up a lot of your passive income. So you just need to make sure that your property manager, everybody that's working in your business, is doing it the way you want them to do it, because you are their customer. The tenants are not their customer. The contractor's not their customer. You are their customer.
Yep. And you can put that in the contract that they have to stick by those guidelines. And then to your point of contractors, that's another big one that can just make or break you. I mean, I think when you're first starting out, if you haven't developed those relationships with the contractors, subcontractors, other vendors, or you're just not experienced in, I always recommend a minimum of 3 quotes per job at the beginning.
Love it.
One, just so you can make sure you're getting the best price, and then you can start to see a trend too. And I think that's important.
Totally. I'm literally in the same boat. You know, they'll come and say, hey, this needs to be done. It's $1,500. Like, where's the second and third quote? Oh, we didn't get one. Well, go back and get one. I'm not just taking the first one. And it's not just the price. A lot of us think, oh, we're going to get a lower price, which is great. Don't get me wrong. But it's more eyeballs on whatever problem it is. I'll give you an example. Let's say you have a furnace that goes out. You have one company that goes out there and they love selling new furnaces and they want you to put a new furnace. Oh, this one's shot. You got to put a new one. Well, that's going to be a lot of money. But if you have other people, maybe you have two other quotes go out, you might get a better price, which is good. But I've found this where I even had an older gentleman who said, no, you don't need to replace it. There's just this $20 part. It cost me $30 to put it in. So $50. I'm like, hey, that's so much better because this guy is not trying to, let's say, sell, but he also knows how to repair it. Maybe those other guys don't know how to repair it. I don't know. So in the end, it's better pricing. And then you also have more eyeballs looking at the problem to hopefully figure out what's the actual problem to save you more money.
Yeah, it's so true. I can think of two situations where this happened to me. One was earlier on, we had a 4-unit and it had plumbing out of the building on each end of the building. So one pipe going out to the main line for 2 units and then one pipe going out the other side of the building to the main line for 2 units. And the one in the back of the property went under the neighbor's building. And these are old buildings in the Northeast. And that neighbor's building was sinking over time, right? Settling. And it crushed the pipe. Well, one plumber came out and said, well, you're going to have to first get approval from the neighbor. We're going to have to dig all this up back to the main line. You know, this is going to cost you like 30, 40, maybe 50 grand. At that time, I had not the type of reserves back then that I do now. And that was going to kill cash flow for years, right? And I'm like, well, we need to get another quote. That's just crazy. So we get another quote. And this guy's like, inside the property, you can just reroute that pipe to the other one going out the front. And it was like 3 or 4 grand. So like a tenth of the cost. And so that's why it's important to get multiple quotes. And then another one was once we started getting into the bigger stuff, we were replacing dormers. It was on the outside, like the fascia, the soffits, all that stuff was getting new wood because they had brought it over time. And original quote was going to be somewhere around 100 to 200 grand, which is a big expense, right? And we had it budgeted, but then we found a local guy. He's like, nah, I think it was around like 30 or 40 grand. It was just like crazy.
That's a great savings.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, he took his time, but at the end of the day, that's the outside of the building. It's not going to slow us down from moving people in. But yeah, that's why it's so important because that can save you so much money. But yeah, well, I bet we could talk about these stories all the time. But first, before I forget, unless there's anything you want to talk about before I ask these final questions, but I just want to make sure, where can people find you, your socials, your website, your coaching? How can they find you?
Absolutely. And I love giving away. I think it's probably one of your questions, but I have a free course I would love to give away just right now. Would it be okay if I gave everybody that out?
Yeah, of course.
Awesome. So I just want to give this out. I love seeing people change their life by investing in real estate. So if you text the word rental, R-E-N-T-A-L to 33777. Rental to 33777. I'll literally give this real estate investing course, show you how to build the business, find a property anywhere in the country to buy properties, to scale your business, to be able to quit your job. You can even go to masterpassiveincome.com/free course, masterpassiveincome.com/free course, all one word. I'll literally give it to you. But then also I love Instagram's a lot of fun. So you can find me on the Dustin Heiner. T-H-E Dustin Heiner. Now, I'm not that arrogant. It's just the only handle I could come up with. So I have that. I also do have a podcast of my own. It's called Master Passive Income. It's a solo show. It's literally just me giving out all this information on how I do my business. So hopefully you can learn too. Same thing on YouTube as well. You can find me. Just look up Master Passive Income. You'll find me out there.
Awesome. Hey, I appreciate that. Definitely take him up on that, guys. He already brought a ton of value on the show. So I'm sure that free resource is going to be packed with it. And check out his podcast and his socials too. All right, Dustin. Let's do the final four questions. You ready for them?
Let's do it.
All right. So the first one we've kind of already hit on, but why real estate and multifamily as an asset class for building generational wealth and passive income? And then the second prong to that is what type of life has it afforded you?
Oh my goodness. So the why is you are making money instead of earning money. That's the biggest thing is once I realized that there's a way to make money instead of earn money, earning is you work 1 hour, you get paid for that 1 hour, you earn money. Well, you only have so much time and eventually it goes away. And so how much better would it be if you bought an asset that actually made you money while you sleep? So that's why real estate in general. So everything from residential to multifamily to storage units, like everything's good. Don't get me wrong. Every type of investing is good as long as you create a business first. And with that business, making money every single month. That's what we want. Now, if you're in a syndication, you might get it quarterly, whatever it might be, but you got to be putting that money back in your pocket. That's the number one thing. Now, what it's afforded me to do in my life. So what was fun? So I was building my business, buying properties, and eventually I was quitting my job. And I worked for the government, so it didn't matter if I was telling people, oh, yeah, in a couple of years, I'll eventually quit. They can't really fire you for that. So I was telling people and friends and family members, coworkers, friends from church, and they would ask me, well, how are you going to quit? And I would answer, well, I invest in real estate. I make money from my properties. The second question always came very fast. Can you show me? And so I realized, because I started teaching friends and family members, seeing them buy properties and quit their job, which was terrific. But I realized I enjoyed it, number one. But then number two, it takes a lot of time doing it one-on-one. And so I wrote a book called How to Quit Your Job with Rental Properties. Not very creative, just straightforward to the point. But then I create a podcast and YouTube channel. It's just fun. Now I have 40 plus hours of my life back that I could literally give as much as I can out and then build businesses. And now I'm getting paid for my own value that I put out into the world, as opposed to what somebody else says is my worth. So now that I have that, I am now afforded to literally not work a job, be successfully employed and hang out with you.
I know, right? And that's part of my story that I always bring up too. People ask like kind of my mindset shift is one, I realized I needed to leave my career just because from a moral standpoint, and also I just wanted more, right? And I really wanted to help people build generational wealth. I felt what we were doing in traditional finance just wasn't it, right? It was more for people in the company that I was in, like me and not the others. They were the ones making the real money, right? And so first I realized I needed to develop the lifestyle I wanted to live before I could even think about what was going to get me there. And so the two things, obviously I needed a certain amount of money to do the things I wanted to do, take care of the people I want to take care of. That's a given, right? The other thing is I wanted what you just mentioned, is flexibility in my calendar, in my time. Because as you've mentioned earlier, that's our most valuable resource, the most scarce resource, something we can't add more of. And so then I started thinking, okay, well, who do I know that has those two things? They make enough money to do the things they want to do and the time. And I thought about people I would see at the golf course at obscure hours, successful business people I ran into, friends that had those two things, just people I'd run into over time. And they all happen to be in real estate. So I was like, ding, 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 ding. And that's what it's afforded me, money and time. And you can do amazing things with both of those things. So I love that answer. All right. Number two, and I'm excited for this answer because you coach a lot of people, which is a lot of people to do what you did is be successfully unemployed. Or what is the most common thing that you see people make a mistake? And maybe it's a mistake that you've made yourself. What's kind of that common theme?
Yeah, the common theme that I see is number one, they don't build the business first. They don't have experts on the ground that are going to be doing all the work for them. And so that's the number one problem. The number one hurdle for most of my students is building that business. With that, the number one thing that they do wrong is jump right to looking to buy a property as opposed to figuring out how they're going to manage it, continually make money every single month. Sometimes they even look to buy the property and don't even know if they're going to make money every single month on the property. They're like, oh, I look at this property. It looks like this. It's next to this school or it's this, you know, whatever criteria they come up in their own head, but they do not make sure that they're going to make a minimum of $250 a month in passive income. And so if you shoot for $50 a month in passive income, it's going to take a lot of properties for you to be able to quit your job. And what if there's a month that it's not rented for, then it goes a lot of your passive income. So the minimum is $250 a month, but building the business first so you have experts on the ground running the business for you.
Yeah. To me, it's a no-brainer now, but looking back, I probably didn't do it that way, right? The first time.
We all didn't.
Yeah. It's like, just pick yourself up by the bootstraps and start walking, right? But like, I think that's so important to have the systems and structure in place. And obviously the best way to learn that is from someone who's done it before. I cannot say that enough. It's gotten to me where I am today. So yeah, I agree 100%. And the cool thing about like the 250 minimum is that's the minimum you should probably start off from the beginning. Once you create enough success, like you can up that, right? Because it's like worth your time to do that. Maybe not. Maybe it's 500, maybe it's 1,000. And that's what's cool about this game is as you scale, you can be that picky and it can just create a better life. All right. Number three, and you might have already answered this, but what's one resource that whether you're new or seasoned, you should check out to help you navigate this real estate world?
Totally. So definitely get my free course. Again, text the word rental to 33777. Literally give it to you. It'll literally walk you through everything. I've had people invest just by getting that free course, which is great. That's why I give it out. Here's one other resource I would love for everybody to realize and hopefully take advantage of. So when I first started investing in 2006, I was doing it all alone. I had no clue what I was doing, number one. But number two, I was making my way through it, but I didn't have any friends. I didn't have a network. There were no podcasts like this. There were no YouTube channels. So definitely be listening to Sean's podcast. You definitely want to be here over and over again, listening every single week. But at the same time, you also want people around you, a community of people around you. So I created a membership. It's a membership and people come in and I do group coaching, but we have a whole bunch of like thousands of students in there where we're helping each other out. From that, here's the resource. I created a real estate investor conference because I have so many students that they all said, hey, we're friends online. Let's do a meetup. Let's all meet up and do something. I said, that's a great idea, but I don't do anything small. So I said, you know what? I have a lot of friends who do other types of investing, from syndications to multifamily, like hotels to storage units to Airbnb, influencers. They have their own audiences and customers on their coaching. I called them all up. So we had 28 of us in March of 2022, created the conference called the Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference. And it wasn't about those, hey, run to the back and go give us money. It was the opposite of that. In fact, it's all about community. I brought my community and all these other investors that are experts brought their communities together because I have found my students get so much more success and even faster when they're around other people of like mind. And with that, in 2023, so coming up, and in fact, it's going to be every single year. So this year, it's going to be in Phoenix in 2023, May of 2023, the Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference. I literally have over 40 now expert investors who have their own YouTube channel, podcasts, and all that sort of stuff, and students that we're all coming together to build a community. So my suggestion is do something where you're around more people that are of like mind that are going to help you get what you want and you can help them get what you want. And so if you want to use a promo code podcast, I didn't give you the website. So if you go to REWBCON, rubcon.com, it's all abbreviated, REWBCON.com. Use a promo code podcast. I'll give you 10% off. And I know you came from Sean's podcast. Use a promo code podcast and get 10% off because I have seen the life-changingness in my life when I went to conferences. And then now I want that for all of my investors, students, as well as everybody that is listening to my voice. Like, let's all come together and make investing better.
I love it. And that's what I love about real estate too, is that it is a community and people have that type of mindset. Another reason I left finance is because there wasn't that, right? More of like, who's the best, right? A lot of sharks out there, right? It's not looking out for everyone. It's how can I win over on someone? That's what I love about real estate, that community. And that sounds like an amazing event. So anyone who's looking to get into this game, or maybe you're in this game and just want to meet some like-minded people, I've never been, but from just talking with Dustin today and hearing what that sounds like, it sounds like a great event. So check that out. All right, Dustin, last question. Good old time machine question. So if you had a time machine and could go back in time and speak to your younger self, little Dustin, even before IT Dustin, what would you tell yourself? One piece of financial advice that you think could change the trajectory of your life?
Get into passive income so much faster than you ever thought possible. Meaning, don't constantly be looking for earned income. Obviously, getting a job is good. Don't get me wrong. You need to get a job to provide for yourself. But as quickly as you can, start building passive income businesses, finding ways to make money where you do not work an hour and get paid for that hour. But it's by far passive income. Now, it could be getting out of debt, not going into debt, saving money, like all that sort of stuff. But right now, I would say those are all great, but when you have passive income, then you have multiple streams of income because you're trying to find other ways to make passive income. Now, I love having multiple streams of income, but with that, they all flow into my river of income, which is my real estate investing. I use it to buy more properties. So get passive income and then use those streams of income to buy even more passive income.
Yep. You know, they say diversify your investments, but you should also diversify your streams of income because you could be fired from your job, right? And then if that's your only source of income, well, kind of screwed, right? So like diversify your streams of income. I agree 100%. And the first time I ever, I don't know, you probably can share this sentiment too, but the first time I ever had a rent check come in, it was actually multiple because it was three because it was a triplex. It was such a great feeling, right? I didn't do anything other than finding the deal, bringing the money and, you know, signing some documents. I didn't do anything and I was making money. I was sleeping, woke up, and it was the first of the month and I had three checks or three ACHs hit my bank account. It was nothing like it. And to scale and build those streams of income, it's really when your life changes. And to go back to your point earlier where you said you could have just gave up after 6 months, even if you're not hitting like a hurdle, but you just feel like I did all this, I'm putting all this money and I'm only getting $250, $500 a month. Like, is it worth it? Keep going, because once you scale and you get to the point where it's like $5,000, $10,000 a month, $20,000, it's just life changing. Yes, it takes time, but once you get there, it's worth the wait.
Well, and I'll add to that, think of delayed gratification, which means you're putting off now, good things now, because you know, in the future, even better things are going to come. And so what I would do, I'd buy that first property, made me $250 or more in passive income. I wouldn't go and spend it. Like, I would not increase my standard of living. I would save that money to then buy the next property. And then every bit of money that I got from those properties, I would save that money to buy the next property. And then now we have plenty of properties now where we just have plenty of money coming in, which is terrific. So that delayed gratification, putting things off for the future, because you know, it's going to be even better.
Yep. Well, you're going to like how I end my podcast then, because it has to do with delayed gratification. So
awesome.
First of all, Dustin, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate your time. This has been awesome. And listeners, as I always say, easy doesn't pay well and instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for money, have your money work hard for you so you can create the life of your dreams and we can all make the world a better place, because that comes from personal excellence. Let's get after it. All right, catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.